And with that, I think I am ready to introduce who I have with me today. I have several of my colleagues at the Special Education Strand, including our director, Dr. Greg Roberts. He is going to be speaking for just a few minutes to provide us with an overview of the specific project that has led to today's webinar. I also have with me Katie Tackett, who is a research associate with the Special Education Strand and a doctoral student in special education at the University of Texas. She has really been the lead on this project, and she's been extremely involved with the selection and the visitation of the sites that she's going to be describing during today's call. Throughout the webinar, we will be taking questions from you. Again, you can submit those via the chat feature, and when appropriate, we'll pause and answer as many of those questions as we can. And finally, at the end of the webinar, we'd like to ask you to provide us with some feedback on today's event by completing the online evaluation form, which will be available a little bit later today. We are especially interested in collecting feedback from you on the content of today's webinar and any other kinds of information regarding RTI implementation that would assist the regional comprehensive and regional resource centers with providing effective technical assistance to states. So at this time, I'd like to get things started by turning things over to Greg for a few introductory comments.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Christy, for that, and welcome to all of you. We're delighted that you could be with us today, and we are also delighted to have the opportunity to share with you what we've been doing, and then a little bit about what we may be doing with some of this in the future. It's really important, I think, that we spend just a few minutes at the outset clarifying what these, I'll call them data in the sense that it's information, what this information is, and really what it is not. And I think, that, yes, on your screen you have five general points that I want to just mention briefly, and Katie throughout her presentation, I think, will be returning to many of these. Number one, we do have the brief that is serving as the basis for this webinar. It's currently in review, and we're hoping that that would be ready to disseminate to you all and others in the spring of 08. And that will describe, as Christy noted, the practices related to RTI in five schools here in the U.S. Now the focus of all of this, the brief, the webinar, Katie's efforts and activities, is on effective instruction and the implementation of effective instruction within an RTI framework. And we're defining instruction broadly to include not only teaching and curriculum, but also progress monitoring, professional development, and other school-related and or classroom-based types of activities that support the learning of students on instruction. And I think when Katie gets started, you'll see that try to stay to that focus. The third point there, these resources should not serve as a how-to manual. These are five schools. You have five schools that agreed to help us out graciously, and we're delighted and very grateful for their time and effort. But it is still just five schools. And we aren't looking at yet, and we may never, for that matter, look at we can say that if you do X or Y, then you're probably going to have Z happen with your kids. We think that, first, the kinds of questions we're wanting to get at really don't lend themselves to that sort of analysis or that kind of research. And then, secondly, even if they did, certainly our sample of five would be far too small to make any kinds of reliable statements about what causes improved achievement, at least within RTI implementation. The fourth point there, the content in these resources should not be considered as best practices. Again, the schools we've been working with are, we have just been really pleased and impressed to spend time with them. And we think that what we've been able to observe represents very good practice. But it's difficult, again, because of the sample size and because so little is known about implementing RTI, it's difficult for us to say that these, in fact, are the best practices. We probably would argue that they're good practices. But until much more is known, it's difficult to say that they are, in fact, best practices. Another point to stress here, and this is not one of the five, but I just want to clarify that we aren't looking specifically at the elements that represent or constitute RTI. In other words, we know a great deal about progress monitoring. There's been a lot of substantive research done on that. We're not looking at trying to replicate or validate that research. We're going to take that as a given. The same with effective instruction. The same with principles of effective professional development. We're not, again, looking to sort of validate that. We're looking at strategies that you all can use or that schools can use to implement, integrate, and support these research-based elements of RTI. So again, the question isn't, does RTI work? The question is, what are strategies for best supporting its implementation? And the really big question, and frankly what prompted all this, is our hearing again and again, well, what are other schools doing? What are other schools doing? And we decided maybe the best thing to do is just to go out there and find out what are other schools doing. And that is what Katie is going to talk to you about. She's going to, I think now, do that and tell us a little bit about what she's seen and heard in her time with the five schools.
Thank you, Greg, and good afternoon to everyone. And like Greg mentioned, one of the questions that we've most often heard here at the Center on Instruction Special Education Strand is, what are other states, districts, and schools doing? And quite frankly, prior to the spring of this last year, we really didn't have a very good answer to that question. We knew a lot about effective components of RTI. We knew a lot about good resources for RTI. But we didn't know a lot about what RTI looked like in schools. And so that really, you know, kind of formed the impetus behind this particular project. And this webinar is just the first in what we hope are a series of projects that try to help answer that question as far as what are other schools doing. I will now briefly describe the process we undertook to select our five sites. A more detailed description of the selection process is going to be in the report that Greg mentioned. Again, we expect that report to be coming out sometime in the spring. And so more detailed description will be in there. But for the time being, I'll walk you through this pretty quickly. We worked with a team of national experts on RTI implementation. And these really could be considered like the movers and the shakers in terms of implementing RTI at the state level. And we worked with them to identify schools and school districts that were working in any capacity on aspects of RTI. We didn't just want sites that had been doing RTI for 12 years, for 20 years. Instead, we really wanted to find schools at all levels of the continuum, some schools that were just beginning RTI, other schools that had been doing it for a while and had a more mature implementation. From these national experts, we got a list of nominees, and I contacted all of the schools that were nominated to participate, and from that list, 15 agreed to participate in an hour-long phone interview. These phone interviews occurred in January of 2007, and they occurred with whoever the site decided wanted to be on the phone. So for some sites, I was speaking to a special education teacher or a reading specialist. At other sites, I was speaking with a school psychologist or the principal. For other sites, I was speaking with an entire team of personnel, either at the school level or at the district level. General information about each site's RTI-related efforts was collected during these hour-long phone interviews. Some of the questions that we asked were, describe your RTI model, why did you decide to implement an RTI framework, how does your school identify children who are at risk, and describe the professional development that occurred related to RTI. So basically, we just really wanted the sites to walk us through what RTI looked like on their campuses. From the information I gathered from these phone interviews, I wrote up about 4 to 6 page narrative report, and those reports really kind of described what each school was doing in terms of progress monitoring, universal screening, professional development, et cetera, all the components of RTI. We then masked those site reports. So all identifying information was taken out of the site reports. They were then sent to our steering committee, and our steering committee consisted of personnel from the Office of Special Education Projects in D.C., the Center on Instruction Special Education staff, as well as a team of national experts on RTI. And the five sites were selected unanimously, by the steering committee, and they felt that these sites really represented good models of RTI in terms of they were consistent with the preponderance of research. They had all of the components of RTI that research has said were essential to the success of RTI. They also represented settings where RTI might be particularly helpful. We looked for sites that were diverse in terms of geography, student population, as well as in terms of grades and what subjects they were doing RTI in. We also looked for schools that served a high percentage of students that were serving free and reduced, serving a student population of free and reduced lunch, high English language learner student population, et cetera. And so we selected those five sites. I conducted one-day site visits for all of these sites in the spring of 2011. And at this point, I just really want to thank those five sites. They were very welcoming to me during these one-day site visits, as well as they have just completely kind of opened up what they do and given us lots of information that I am very appreciative of. I've learned so much from them, and I hope that through this webinar, through the report that's coming out, and through other projects that we have planned, that you all will be able to learn as much as I did from these sites. My kind of five contact people at each of the sites are five of the most dedicated and passionate people you will find in education today, at least in my opinion. And so I was just very grateful and honored to be able to work so closely with them. During the site visits, I conducted one-hour interviews with the principals and RTI leadership team, and our focus group with teachers that taught at all of the different levels of intervention at the school, as well as 30-minute observations of instruction at each level of intervention. The identity of the five implementation sites will not be disclosed. These are five schools that are very busy doing a very important job of educating students, and so therefore, because this transcript, or because the audio and this PowerPoint will be put on our website as well as the report, we didn't want to go ahead and identify them, so that way there wasn't every time another school came across the report and had a question about RTI, these five sites didn't need to receive phone calls from everyone that saw this information. So instead, I'll be referring to them as School A, School B, School C, School D, and School E. Overall, the sites stand grades K through H. They serve nearly 3,000 students and represent five distinct geographic regions. School A is a mid-sized elementary school in Oregon, serving students in grades K through 5. A majority of students at School A are eligible for free and reduced lunch, and approximately 40% of students are English language learners. School A uses a three-tier model for reading, writing, math, behavior, and attendance. School B is a large elementary school in Wisconsin, serving fifth and sixth graders. It's structured like a middle school, though, with classes organized into periods and grades divided into teams. There are three teams at the fifth grade level and two teams at the sixth grade level. School B serves a small percentage of students that are eligible for free and reduced lunch, and only 1% of the students are designated as English language learners. School B implements a four-tier model for reading and a three-tier model for math. School C is a mid-sized K-4 elementary school in Pennsylvania. Over 40% of the students are eligible for free and reduced lunch. 1% of students are designated as English language learners. School C implements a three-tier model for reading and math. School D is a mid-sized K-5 elementary school in Florida. Over half of the students at School D are eligible for free and reduced lunch, with a small percentage of students designated as English language learners. School D implements a four-tiered model in reading. School E is a mid-sized middle school in California, serving students in grades 6 through 8. Half of the students are eligible for free and reduced lunch, and approximately a quarter of the students are designated as English language learners. School E implements a three-tier model in reading and is beginning implementation of a tiered model in math. Now, I know that I spoke a lot about, you know, there's a three-tier model at this school and a four-tier model at that school. I'm not going to have time today during this webinar to get into what is School B doing in the four tiers of reading or what is School C doing in Tier 3 of math. That information will all be included in the report that's coming out this spring, but we just don't have time to get into that level of detail in the webinar. But just remember that with RTI, it's more of a framework, and so what's occurring in each individual tier or the number of tiers doesn't really matter as much as the fact that we know that the tiers, the higher they go in number, the more intense they are in terms of the level of interventions they offer to students. Now, Greg mentioned a couple of caveats before we started, and I want to go ahead and reiterate some of those as well as mention some of my own. The webinar and the report that's coming out this spring are organized into a frequently asked questions format. I felt this really was kind of the most reader-friendly way to do this, as well as an easy way for you all to find the information that you need when you need it. However, not all of the sites are going to be highlighted in every response. Otherwise, this report and the webinar would be much longer than they are. So I highlight, for some of the questions, all of the sites will be highlighted, but typically trends will be identified, and then one or two sites for each response will be highlighted. The description of the practices that I'll be talking about today and that are mentioned in the report should not be interpreted as an endorsement of the practices or that we've evaluated these practices. Instead, it really is a description. What I'll be doing today is really trying to offer a snapshot to you all of what these five sites are currently doing. Again, just because we mention a certain practice does not mean that we endorse it or that the Department of Education endorses it. Instead, we're really just trying to paint you all a picture and be able to answer the question, what are these schools doing in terms of RTI implementation? The selection and effectiveness of certain strategies were influenced by local circumstances. I think this might be kind of one of the biggest trends that we noticed when looking at all of the information we collected. What works for these schools may or may not work with the schools and districts with which you all work with. Really, you will see that while the framework's the same across all of the schools, the way that the schools implement RTI really differs according to their local circumstances. And that's something that most of the principals and school leaders that I spoke with really stressed. They realized that RTI is something that is very dynamic and something that is very dependent on what a school's resources are, what their needs are, and what their staff capacity is. In addition, some of the described practices may, over time, be subject to more rigorous types of research. When that happens, when we can get kind of more compelling information about some of these practices, the need for documents and webinars such as the information presented here may diminish. Until then, this webinar and the accompanying report are what we offer here at the Center on Instruction as a means of advancing the discussion about RTI's implementation. What you see on your screen now is a list of all of the questions answered in the accompanying report. These questions were crafted in response to feedback submitted from staff from the regional comprehensive centers. Due to the limited time today, I don't have time to answer all of the questions, but remember, all of these questions are covered in the report. I'll be focusing on the bolded questions today. If you are interested in an answer that I am not specifically highlighting, please submit a question through the chat feature of the webinar or email Christy. That way, if we have time at the end of the presentation today, I would be happy to address any questions that we don't get to in the kind of the meat of this presentation. All right, so now it is time for the meat of this presentation. The first question that I chose to highlight were, what were the key steps for implementing RTI? And it was interesting. While you'll see pretty soon that these sites chose different ways to kind of roll out RTI, there were two main themes that became evident across all five sites. First, prior to implementation, all of the sites examined their current practices in order to determine which components of RTI were in place on their campuses and the degree to which those practices were effective. For example, School A was already using curriculum-based measurements to do progress monitoring. So they've been doing that for several years now. So when they started to think about implementing RTI, they really looked at their practice of progress monitoring. Was it effective? Did they do it in a timely manner? Were they able to use that data to help plan interventions? School D was already offering a system of interventions to students that were struggling. However, before they started implementing RTI, they really wanted to look, are those interventions effective? What do we need to tweak about these interventions to be able to fit into our RTI framework? In addition, all of the schools began implementing RTI in phases. There was not one single site that attempted a school-wide implementation of all elements of RTI simultaneously at the beginning of year one. These schools really stressed the need to kind of start doing this in phases and to take steps, to not try and go full throttle in year one at the very beginning. The schools did differ in the ways that they rolled out RTI. For example, School C piloted RTI in a select number of classrooms in grades K through 2 during year one. And the principal decided to do this because he really wanted to see what worked, what didn't work, what resources were needed. He wanted for those teachers in those grades to really be able to identify, okay, what are the challenges? What are the obstacles? What other professional development do we need in order to make this successful? And the principal stressed that he felt that by piloting RTI in a small number of grades, that they were really able to strike a balance between going slowly but not too slowly. And he stressed that you want to go slowly because you don't want to overwhelm your staff and your students with trying to do too much at one time. However, you don't want to go too slowly because he was worried that that would then minimize RTI's impact, as well as students and teachers wouldn't be able to see the progress that RTI was helping with their students, or not be able to see their students' progress, and therefore it wouldn't help with teacher buy-in. School D's district was very involved in helping them implement RTI, and they assist all the schools in their district in beginning RTI implementation. The School D's district has established certain criteria that schools have to meet in order to receive the district help. First of all, the schools have to commit to weekly progress monitoring and flexible grouping. They have to purchase the district recommended resources. And they have to dedicate time for professional development and the discussion of data. Once the schools have agreed to meet those criteria, then the district RTI team comes in and helps the school start piloting RTI. And the way that they do this is the interested schools select at the grade level to begin RTI implementation. At this point in the time of No Child Left Behind, not surprisingly, all of the schools have selected third grade to start with. But once the school selects the grade, then the RTI team comes in and really models every step of the way. They work with the grade on implementing screening. They work with the grade on implementing progress monitoring measures. They really model discussions during team meetings about how to discuss data, how to use the data to plan intervention. And they also model how to administer the intervention. So they really do model every step of the way. Once a certain grade has really seemed to grasp the concepts of RTI and are ready to do it on their own, then the district teams begins working with another school, another grade at that same school. And one thing that the district team really stressed to me is that they are flexible regarding which of the district adopted curriculum the schools choose to use and which staff members are responsible for their implementation. They recognize that the schools in their district differ in terms of their needs, their resources, and the circumstances, and that the implementation of RTI should proceed in ways that reflect those differences. RTI does not look the same at all of the schools in this district. Instead, it really does seem to matter on what's going on at each individual campus, and that was something that the district really wanted to stress, was that when they were rolling this out, they were definitely very cognizant of what the schools needed and allowed the schools to adapt the framework in such a way that would meet their needs. As far as what kind of professional development on RTI was offered to the staff, most of the schools followed a train-the-trainers model in terms of educating their staff on RTI's principles and practices. In this model, select staff, which were typically members of the school's RTI leadership team, usually possibly a principal, a school psychologist, some general education teachers, reading specialists, special education teachers, possibly also an English language learner specialist. Those that leadership team would attend an externally provided training, such as the trainings provided at the district or state level regarding RTI, and they would bring that information and disseminate that information back to their staff. And a lot of the schools felt that this was really the most efficient way to train their staff quickly and efficiently on the basic principles of RTI. So a lot of this particular professional development covered what is RTI, what are the components of RTI, where did RTI come from, how does it differ from the discrepancy model, et cetera. It was interesting, most of the professional development at these schools didn't just occur during days set aside for professional development or teacher work days. Instead, they occurred all the time. It's kind of a continuous process of professional development. They also happened during the grade-level team meetings, which usually happen weekly, possibly during the monthly RTI team meetings. The schools really stress the need that you can't, that giving, providing professional development on RTI wasn't kind of a one-shot deal. You can't expect to train your teachers in 2 days and then be done in terms of professional development. Instead, they were continuously training and offering professional development. As the RTI implementation at each site grew more sophisticated, the professional development moved from, at first, was really focused on kind of the principles and components of RTI. And as they became more adept with implementing RTI at each campus, they really started to focus more on specific practices. For example, School A's plan in this coming year was to cover topics such as progress monitoring and data analysis. School D is doing something unique by offering refreshers on effective implementation of their intervention programs. They have decided to videotape a lot of the intervention programs, so that way if teachers need some refreshers about how to implement certain programs with fidelity, they could then watch this videotape on their own time to serve as a refresher about the implementation of each program. As far as who provides the interventions, I think the answers to this question and the following question, which is when do the interventions occur, really kind of reconfirm that or reaffirm the fact that RTI is so dependent on local circumstances, as you will see. None of these schools seem to do the same thing in terms of who provides the interventions or when they schedule the interventions. The sites really varied in the personnel used to implement the interventions, with staff capacity, scheduling, and student need being the major factors influencing student decisions. At School A, educational assistants administer all of the interventions at all tiers. The educational assistants generally rotated the intervention they delivered, as well as where they delivered it, according to student need and space availability. For example, when I was there, I saw one educational assistant deliver a small group instruction, so something that would probably fall under their Tier 2 category, to a group of first graders in the hallway using a scripted program. And then 20 minutes later, she was in a separate classroom administering a one-on-one or a Tier 3 intervention to a third grader using a different scripted program. So they really tried, they trained all of their educational assistants on all of the interventions that they were expected to administer. So that way, they were able to meet their student needs and not worried about you know, matching up, was the teacher trained in a certain, or was an educational assistant trained in a certain intervention and the student schedule, but really trying to match up the interventions with student needs. At schools B and E, and these are the two schools that are structured like middle schools, they had an array of instructional personnel teach the Tier 2 interventions. They had English language learner specialists teaching the interventions, Title I personnel, a speech and language pathologist, special education teachers, reading specialists, et cetera. They were all offering these Tier 2 interventions. At School C and D, the general education teachers taught the Tier 2 interventions. For both schools, these are both elementary schools, they grouped the students homogeneously for Tier 2 interventions within a grade. So all of the students at, say, second grade that qualified for Tier 2 interventions would receive Tier 2 interventions at the same time from the general education teachers. At most of the schools, the reading specialists and or special education teachers administered the most intense interventions, and these intense interventions were the ones that occurred at either Tier 3 or Tier 4. And so basically, a lot of the schools followed the model of bringing out their so-called heavy hitters in order to deliver the most intense interventions for the most struggling students. As far as when do interventions occur, I think every time I brought up scheduling, I elicited groans from all of the 5 sites. Scheduling was definitely a significant challenge for all of the sites. I don't think there was a single site that felt that they really have scheduling down and that they are completely confident in their scheduling system. Creativity was repeatedly mentioned as necessary to successfully schedule the interventions. A lot of the schools cited the need to really think outside of the box in order to determine when to offer these interventions. Some of the schools sat down during the summer and really prioritized all of the activities and all of the subjects that they teach in their school, and they sat down and had to make tough choices about what were priorities for their students and what weren't priorities for their students. And so I think that really, in doing that, they were able to identify when they should schedule these interventions, kind of what could give in terms of their scheduling. The interventions, one thing that was clear across all 5 sites was that the interventions were scheduled for the same time period to permit easy transition. And when I'm talking about transitions, I'm not just talking about from Tier 2 to Tier 3 or Tier 3 to Tier 2, but also within Tier 2 groups. For example, School C and D, as I mentioned, offered those homogeneous Tier 2 interventions within grade levels. And the way that they did this was that they had certain groups that focused on certain components of reading and or math. For example, they might have group, and they might have a vocabulary group, and they might have a comprehension group. And so they would be able to transition these students easily between groups if a particular intervention wasn't meeting a particular student's needs. At School D, the students that were not participating in Tier 2 interventions were either involved in centers or in independent work, as their general education teachers were administering these interventions. At School C, all students actually participate in Tier 2 interventions. And they do this through a daily 30-minute period, and the period is called the Extended Learning Opportunities. And these are led by classroom teachers. And for the students that are performing above grade level, they may receive an intervention such as Reader's Theater. And this would occur in a group of 25 students with one teacher or possibly with an educational assistant and a parent volunteer. Students performing on grade level typically received additional grade level instruction in smaller groups. These usually occurred in groups of 12 to 15 students. And this instruction may include activities extending the core curriculum. And then students performing below grade level, or those students that we would typically think of as Tier 2 students, received remedial instruction in groups of less than 8 on their specific skill needs. And again, that was all offered by the general education teachers. At schools B and E, these are the middle schools, they, in their Tier 2 interventions, they really focused on pre-teaching or reteaching the materials introduced in the core curriculum. And so in order to do this, the Tier 2 interventions could not be scheduled at the same time as the Tier 1 interventions. So their scheduling was a little bit different. And also in middle schools, with being organized in periods, they had to do a lot of the scheduling prior to the beginning of the school year in terms of identifying students as who needed intervention. So they would have all of their Tier 2 and Tier 3 interventions scheduled at the same time. So that way, if a student was struggling and not making progress in Tier 2, they could easily move them to Tier 3 without disrupting the rest of their schedule. Same thing goes for the other way, where students were making progress in Tier 3 and could then graduate to Tier 2, they were able to do that without having to disrupt the rest of their schedule. What role, if any, does RTI play in special education eligibility decisions? All of the sites follow their state and or district guidelines in terms of making special education eligibility decisions. All of the sites were really looking for more guidance from their state or district in terms of how to use RTI for eligibility decisions. Schools A, C, and E are in states that have provided guidance to the districts and schools, and so they were using RTI as part of their identification process. For example, School A uses RTI to determine eligibility in grades K through 5, and the referral process for School A begins after quote-unquote unsuccessful participation in 1 Tier 2 and 2 Tier 3 interventions. So in this case, a student would be referred, would be identified as needing one tier one intervention, and it would be, or excuse me, one tier two intervention. They'd be in that intervention for approximately a month. If they still weren't making progress, they would then switch to a tier three intervention, which again is offered at the same time to be able to let students transition fluidly between those tiers. So they would then be in one tier three intervention. If they weren't making progress for a set period of time in that intervention, they would then be given another tier three intervention. If they still weren't making progress, then the referral process would start at school A. And in order to, to determine eligibility, the school considers data that's derived from the intervention, so they use all this data that they have from tiers two and tiers three, as well as assessment data, such as standardized test data, the student's developmental history, and information in the student's cumulative file. In addition, if they have parent consent, the multidisciplinary team can request additional testing, such as measures of behavior or attention. The special education director of the district really felt that since the implementation of RTI, the process has been streamlined and made much more transparent. In addition, according to the principal, they've had fewer referrals to special education since they started implementing RTI. However, the number and percentage of students identified with learning disabilities has stayed the same. So while they have fewer referrals, they're still identifying the same number of students. And the principal really felt this is because they were more accurate in identifying those students that have a true learning problem instead of over-referring students to special education. School C also uses RTI to determine LD eligibility at all grade levels. They use the data from screening and progress monitoring, along with parent input, classroom observation data, and standardized test data. School C does administer an abbreviated IQ test. However, this IQ test is really supposed to serve as another source of data. It's not used to calculate any type of discrepancy. Students are still being identified as having learning disabilities at School B, but the principal at School C, similar to the principal at School A, really feels that they are becoming a lot more accurate in terms of their identification. As a teacher at School C noted, that they are no longer identifying students as having disabilities because we did not know what to do with them. Instead, they feel like they're really identifying those students that do have true learning problems. Schools B and D continue to use the discrepancy model in their identification process. They do want more information about how to use all of this data that they're collecting, but they're waiting for their state guidelines to come out regarding how to use RTI data in the LD identification process. What challenges do the sites report having in implementing RTI? Besides scheduling, which definitely was the most significant challenge, a lot of the sites identified teacher buy-in, particularly among general education teachers, as a significant challenge. Four of the sites reported that teacher support for RTI increased as the students began making progress. So a lot of the schools reported that you just kind of have to ask the teachers to take a leap of faith and to just trust you in the process. And as they see their students making progress, they will then be able to buy, they will then buy in more into the system and buy more into RTI. At School B, the teachers of elective courses, such as the choir, woodshop, et cetera, and these were the were really worried about RTI in terms of their enrollment numbers because interventions were being offered during the elective courses. And the administration at School B found that by sharing student data from the progress monitoring and screening measures with the elective teachers and including them in the data retreats really increased their overall support for RTI. So by including all teachers in these meetings, they were able to increase all teacher buy-in in terms of RTI implementation. And the principal at School C decided that he really wanted to make his RTI leadership team as good models in terms of teacher buy-in. And so he purposely selected the members of his staff to serve on the RTI leadership team. And he selected teachers that, based on their willingness to do whatever was necessary to ensure student success. It's quick to point out that these weren't always the yes teachers or the yes people, the people that he could count on to do whatever he asked. Instead, these were teachers that weren't afraid to challenge him and to challenge decisions that were made if they felt that they weren't in the best interest of the students. So when the other teachers saw these teachers really buying into the RTI implementation, they then in turn decided to start supporting RTI. And again, at all of the schools, once they started seeing their students make progress, then the teachers really supported the RTI implementation. Resources were also a challenge, not just for School C, but for several of the schools. And this wasn't so much in terms of materials or intervention materials, but really in terms of staff. A lot of the schools reported that with RTI, some of their staff had to change or shift in terms of their roles and responsibilities. For example, the school psychologists at several of the schools, really their role evolved away from managing the eligibility meetings and conducting evaluations towards a greater involvement with instruction. The school psychologists now spend time providing instructional recommendations, collecting data, serving on the RTI leadership team, and facilitating data collecting and decision making. In addition, there were several reading coaches or reading specialists or instructional support team members that moved away from conducting observations, collecting data, coordinating meetings with parents and teachers, serving as coaches for teachers, to really working with students directly and administering those Tier 3 intense interventions. So for a lot of the sites, it was a challenge having these teachers accept their new roles and responsibilities within an RTI framework. What are the perceived benefits of implementing RTI? All of the sites reported that RTI has enabled them to better serve all of their students. School A and E both cited the variety of available interventions and the focus on matching each of their interventions with the student's needs. They have gathered and in some cases developed a vast repertoire of programs that they believe meet the needs of all students. It really kind of minimizes the possibility that students would slip through the cracks. Another offsetted benefit was increased collaboration among teachers and also between teachers and instructional support personnel, such as the educational assistants. Several sites noted that implementing RTI successfully is a school-wide understanding that requires a sense of shared responsibility for all students by all teachers. Schools B and C discussed the importance of being on the same page when planning instruction and implementing curriculum and its organizing effects on local communities of practice. RTI's focus on prevention also fostered a more collaborative spirit in several of the schools. The divide between general education and special education was not evident at any of these schools. And the past tendency of general education teachers to kind of think special education first when they encountered a struggling student was really replaced by an increased awareness of the possibility and benefits of prevention. Teachers were no longer necessarily automatically referring students who were struggling to special education, but instead they were asking, what can we do better to help these students? One teacher I felt really summed it up nicely. RTI has allowed all students to benefit from all teachers. And being able to sit in and listen in on discussions among the teachers at all five sites, I can honestly say that these teachers really spoke of our kids. There was no longer my kids versus your kids. They were speaking about our kids, and their discussions were all very student-centered, very what do we need to do to be able to help the students succeed in a general education classroom. What are other things that we can do to help support the student? It was quite inspiring. School B also reported that they felt that their students' motivation was on the rise due in part to RTI's implementation. Their students, and this is one of our middle school schools, were actively involved with their progress monitoring data. They had weekly discussions with their intervention teachers about their data. They knew exactly where they were in terms of their progress monitoring goals. This gave them the opportunity to kind of self-identify their strengths and in their areas needing improvement. They also then set goals for every other week for their progress monitoring. And it was this goal setting and the sharing of the data with the students was motivating for the teachers and the students. And the students really understood what it would take for them to graduate from the interventions. And School B does an excellent job of really kind of celebrating the students as they graduated from the interventions and from the tiers. And the students were actively working towards those goals because they knew exactly where they were due to the progress monitoring data. What funds, local, state, or federal, are being used to implement RTI? The sites utilized a range of funding sources to support RTI's implementation. School A benefited from state and district funds that were earmarked for RTI implementation. There was at least one full-time staff member on the district team that was dedicated solely to helping schools with their RTI implementation. School D's district was able to use some discretionary funds to purchase some materials for the schools, as well as to hire extra personnel. Now, School D's district didn't have anyone full-time dedicated for RTI implementation, but they did have several people that were at least part-time on the RTI implementation. Now, Schools B and E did not receive any additional funding to implement RTI. The reading specialist at School B noted, the primary driver for implementing RTI has been the reallocation of resources. They've really redirected district funds from other areas to support the development of their interventionists, so to support the professional development necessary to train all of their interventionists. Again, a lot of these schools have changed the roles and responsibilities of their staff to better support the RTI model, and so some of the funds that went with the staff followed them as they got new roles and responsibilities. What type of support do the districts provide? All sites receive support from their district offices in some form. The districts for School A and for School D were definitely very actively involved and took the leadership role in terms of RTI implementation. But for those schools that weren't in districts that were as proactive as School A and School D's districts, all of the sites at least receive permission from their districts in terms of implementing flexible schedules and being able to realign teacher roles as necessary within an RTI framework. School B, and this is interesting, at School B, a special education teacher and the reading specialist are really kind of the drivers of RTI at their school. The principal is supportive of RTI and understands the basic principles of RTI, but really has handed off responsibility for RTI and implementation to the special education teacher and the reading specialist. And the principal has provided them with a great deal of support in terms of giving them time during their day to review student data, to plan and schedule interventions, as well as opportunities for ongoing staff development, because the special education teacher and the reading specialist have offered all of the professional development regarding RTI to the school, have trained all of their staff members on the intervention. School E's district has supported the suspension of science and social studies for those students who required 2 to 3 hours of daily intervention or for those students in Tier 3. So that way this school was able to make those kind of tough choices that they weren't going to provide science and social studies instruction for those students that needed the extra help in reading or math, and the district supported them in terms of that decision. For both School C and School E, their district really supported the use of realigning teacher roles to better fit the RTI framework. For example, the Title I special education teachers no longer have to provide services to just their students. It used to be that if a special education teacher was providing an intervention, then all of the students in that group had to have qualified for special education. Well, the districts for School C and School E allow the special education teacher to provide Tier 3 interventions to any student, regardless of whether or not they have been found eligible for special education or not, as long as there is at least one student, they are able to be a little more flexible in terms of who they deliver their interventions to, and that is thanks to district permission. Now, some basic conclusions before we get into the questions. Certain trends really emerge through examining the data collected from these five sites, and these trends are merely descriptive, they're not evaluative, and they're by no means exhaustive. There's a lot more trends that I'm sure that we can identify, but we really wanted to come up with particular trends that would help those districts and schools that are beginning their implementation of RTI, or for you all that work with those districts and schools and states that are beginning RTI implementation. First of all the sites implemented RTI in phases. For schools and districts beginning implementation, this might mean introducing and mastering one RTI element at a time, such as really focusing on progress monitoring and making sure that you have selected appropriate measures, you are administering them at proper intervals and that you are using the data accurately to help drive instruction. It could also mean implementing RTI in one grade level at a time, such as what School C did by piloting RTI in a particular number of grade levels, or what School D district did by selecting one grade level at a particular school to begin implementing RTI. Or if you're working with the district level, really piloting RTI in one school before implementing it more widely. Another trend that we identified was that the sites really all relied on creative scheduling and flexible uses of funds and teachers to implement RTI. These schools all had to think outside of the box in order to use their existing teachers, their existing resources, their existing funds, and their existing school day to be able to implement RTI. It did require some very tough choices on their part about what students could miss in terms of when to offer interventions, as well as what teachers could you expect to do what role. I don't think any of these sites would say that implementing RTI was easy, and it was something that they would basically that it was something that was easy and doesn't take any time or thought. Rather, it was something that was very difficult. But I think it's safe to say that they would all do it again if faced with that decision. But the RTI implementation definitely requires some tough choices. And finally, RTI implementation is a dynamic process. All of the sites reported changing their implementation throughout the year. As one teacher commented, we were really building the plane as we flew it. RTI is something that does require, as we said, it really is depends on your local circumstances, and it requires change. These schools were all not afraid to reverse decisions that they had made once they saw that it wasn't working. They are constantly using data to really guide their implementation. And if the practice appeared to be increasing student scores, then they kept that practice. If it wasn't, they weren't afraid to change it. And I'm really excited in working with these schools in the coming years to see how they continue to change and improve their RTI implementation.
Thank you, Katie. I'm going to give Katie just a second to rest and take a breath and get a drink of water. And then we will begin asking her some questions. But I do want to remind everybody that the evaluation form, we're going to be posting it in just a few minutes. And in just a second, you should see it pop up on your screen. You can kind of see the questions and the kind of feedback we're interested in. And you can begin thinking about the type of feedback that you'd like to give us. You can begin filling it out as soon as you feel ready to do so, and it will also be open for 30 minutes after the end of today's webinar, so you have plenty of time to give us answers. There are a few questions at the end where there are free responses, so feel free to type as much as you need to. It's very important for us to get honest feedback on today's webinar because your feedback will help us determine whether future webinars like these are suitable and beneficial to you. So we do have some questions that have come in over the chat feature and some email. And the first one is, how are the schools structuring their RTI model? Are they using problem solving, standard protocol, a mixed model?
That's a really good question. And I thought that when I went to these schools, I'd be able to really give you a concrete answer to that question, School A is doing this and School B is doing that. But what I found is that out in schools, it's not as clear as it is when we are learning about the standard protocol or the problem-solving model in research. Instead, the schools are really doing kind of a hybrid of the two. They might be identifying themselves as doing the problem-solving method, but really what I saw is they are using the data from the screen or the progress monitoring measures to place students in interventions, and they might not be placing students all in the same intervention as within a standard protocol, but they also aren't doing this individually like you would expect in a problem-solving model. All of the interventions that I saw were research-based, usually pretty scripted interventions, so even though they were placing students according to their needs, they were still placing them in interventions that followed a standard protocol. So I don't think it's quite as easy as it would seem to categorize these schools either standard protocol or problem solving.
Okay. And let me scroll up here. There's another one that has come in.
For intervention time, do the schools use teachers to do the interventions during class time as part of differentiated instruction, or does everyone set special time aside for the intervention?
Good question. I'm sorry that I didn't clarify that when I was speaking about when interventions occurred. All of these interventions, even those that occur within the general education classroom, for example, at schools C and D, these all occur outside of the core curriculum for both reading and math. So all of the schools did set aside separate times for interventions to be offered, and whether that be a different period, such as the ones in the middle school or in the elementary schools, these happened outside of the reading block and the math block, so it was a separate time for intervention.
Okay. Another question, are any sites using speech and language specialists to provide consultation and intervention?
A couple of the sites are using speech and language pathologists to provide interventions. I can't think of which sites are doing that off the top of my head, but I know that several are. And several of the teams of the sites do have the speech and language pathologist serving on the RTI leadership team. I think it really depends on the sites and the local circumstances to determine, like, who are the students that are in intervention? Are they students that need speech and language services? In addition, what is the role of the speech and language pathologist? How open are they to providing instructional intervention?
Okay. And another one is, can you describe the response by parents to the RTI model in the schools described?
You know, that's an area that we did not collect data on during this first year of the project, and that's something that we're really hoping to focus on in this next year when we engage in site visits and phone calls with the site starting in January. And so that would be a wonderful thing to put in the evaluation as one thing that we can focus on for next year. We're planning on that, but as far as other ideas besides, you know, kind of how these sites have involved parents. I know anecdotally a couple of the sites did mention that parents have been very supportive regarding the RTI implementation, but again, this is not something that we've looked at across all sites, so I'm a little hesitant to comment on it.
Okay. What do you see as the critical elements that need to be in place in order for these schools' RTI implementation to be successful?
You know, I don't think I can answer that because, really, remember, we are just describing what these five sites are doing, and this is just a small snapshot of what schools across the country are doing in terms of RTI implementation. This is just five sites, so I don't feel comfortable kind of generalizing that information. I will say, though, that all of the sites had very strong leaders, whether that leader be the principal or whether that be a special education teacher or a reading specialist, that really took it upon themselves to learn more about RTI implementation, and all of these sites kind of recognize that RTI is this dynamic process and that it's not a one model fits all. There wasn't a single site that said they learned completely from another site and took what everyone else was doing and just put it into their school. They were all very reflective about their local circumstances and their student needs.
Okay, another one has come in. Did any of these schools sense that RTI implementation was supportive of improvements in other areas, for example, discipline?
It's interesting. We didn't focus on that directly, and so it'll all be anecdotally. But one school, School A, does use RTI in terms of behavior, and they have been actually doing behavior with an RTI framework for longer than they've been doing academics. They liked their behavioral framework using positive behavior support and wanted to add academics to that model about 5 years ago, and so that's what they did. But none of the sites kind of mentioned that specifically, and I don't think we can kind of come out and say that there was a cause and effect relationship between having RTI and academic and having improved behavior. They did say that students are more motivated. The students that at the middle schools they both reported because they are pre-teaching and reteaching concepts from the core curriculum in Tier 2 intervention, that these students were now more engaged in Tier 1 core curriculum because they had already been exposed to some of the ideas. So they were coming in as kind of being the quote-unquote experts on the vocabulary words or on a story because they had read the story the day before in their Tier 2 intervention. And the teachers commented that that definitely increased their engagement in the class. But as far as a relationship between participation in academic multi-tiered system of intervention and behavior, we can't make that comment at this time.
Okay. Another one for you. Do you know what kinds of math assessments are being used for screening and for progress monitoring?
A lot of the schools use self-created curriculum-based measurements for the math assessments and for the progress monitoring. A lot of them also use curriculum-embedded measurements. So depending on their particular curriculum, they use the that publisher's embedded assessments to do the screening and the progress monitoring. The particulars of what core curriculums they used and what progress monitoring measures they use is included in the report. I don't have time to, or I don't have that information with me right now to go over that, and also I don't want it to seem like I'm endorsing particular curriculums. We do have all of that information, and it'll be in the report.
Okay. Did you learn anything about how these schools decided to start where they did? And are there any recommendations about how to phase in RTI?
As far as recommendations about how to phase in RTI, I think it's just really important from what the sites did. It's really kind of taking an audit of where a particular school is in terms of what are they doing, what are their student outcomes like, what components of RTI are they already implementing there. I think there are a few schools out there that aren't implementing something that could fit into a framework of RTI, such as offering interventions to struggling students or using progress monitoring to be able to determine how students are doing in the core curriculum. So I would really kind of recommend trying to do some kind of audit and seeing where you are. At least that's what all of the sites did that I've had the opportunity to work with. They did this audit and really didn't just see kind of what they had in place, but also tried to determine if what they had in place was effective. And once you've determined what you have in place is effective, I think it depends on local circumstances, kind of what, how you phase in RTI. Like I said, all of the schools rolled it out very differently, but with the same effect.
Okay, thank you. I think we've been able to get to most of the questions that have come in. And if we didn't get to yours, then we'll be responding to you at a later time. But I was wondering, Katie, if you want to just talk about the next steps for this project for the remainder of this year and you know, next year as well.
Sure. Based on what we hear from you all today in the evaluation poll, we'll really kind of help shape where this project goes and some of the, our next steps in terms of what we look at with these sites. So one thing we know is we will be looking at parent involvement and how do parents become aware of the RTI program, et cetera, at each of these schools. We do expect to either do site visits or do phone interviews for each of the sites. I do have in continual contact with all of the sites through email and phone calls. So we will be collecting more data this spring and hopefully then be publishing another report next year, really reflecting on kind of where the new information we collected and also where the schools are now in terms of their RTI implementation. We have also spoken about doing a website that really displays a lot of the artifacts that we've collected from the RTI sites. And what I mean by artifacts are their schedules, the forms that they use to be able to track all of the data that they have. PowerPoints that they have done and presentations that they have done on RTI to their teachers, to other schools, et cetera. So really kind of trying to collect all of that information, all of those artifacts, and putting it on a website that's connected to the Center on Instruction's website and having a lot of the information there. So that's something else that we'll be working on this spring.
Okay, and you have it been you to answer a couple more questions?
I think so.
All right. We have a couple more that have come in. How are the sites handling fidelity?
That's a good question. A lot of the sites really identified fidelity as kind of their next step in terms of implementation, something that they really are working on. And one thing that I'll be excited to see when I speak with them and visit again with them this spring is how are they doing in terms of improving their fidelity or their fidelity checks. At several of the schools, like such as School A, they do have formal fidelity checks in place. The reading coach conduct formal fidelity checks for all of the educational assistants, because remember, at School A, the educational assistants are the ones that administer all of the intervention. So for them, the reading coach is doing all of the formal fidelity checks in reading. The principal would like to formalize the fidelity checks for math, and that's something that they're not there for yet. But like I said, a lot of the schools identified monitoring the implementation fidelity as an area of improvement that they needed, and something that we'll definitely be looking at as kind of how they're doing in that area.
Okay. This next question, I hope I'm interpreting this one correctly, and if not, then contact us and we'll follow up with you later. Katie, you discussed one school that spent 1 month doing Tier 2, and if no progress in Tier 2, then they received another round of Tier 2 intervention. So I think this question is asking if the school studied trends to inform their decision-making.
Each school really had different kind of decision-making points or cut points in terms of when to transfer a student from Tier 2 to Tier 3 or when a student would be found eligible for Tier 2. There wasn't kind of one trend that all of the schools chose to do in terms of their implementation. For some schools, they were changing students, or students were able to transition between groups at the end of every month. At other points, it was after three consecutive data points were below an A line. For other schools, it was really waiting until the end of a six-week or eight-week grading period. For those students that were in the periods, especially for Tier 3 periods at the middle school level, they really wanted to wait until the end of the semester. So again, it depended on local circumstances. There weren't any overall trends in terms of when schools decided to transition students between tiers. I hope that answered the question.
All right, thank you. I don't see any other questions that have come in at this time. But again, if you do think of questions later, please email me and we will follow up with you. I just want to thank everyone for being online with us today. This is obviously a project that we've worked very hard on, especially Katie. And we've been working on it for a while and finally at a place where we could share this information with you. So we were really excited to do so. And I realize also this is a lot of information to take in today, and that's one of the reasons we have decided to put all of this into a report that you can refer to later. So be looking for that when it comes out. So thank you.